At California Psychics, we know that sometimes you can wake up thinking,
ugh, I don't know if I'm in the right career. Ew. Or the right relationship.
But whatever your life dilemma, at California Psychics, we'll give you the guidance you need to feel certain about your life choices. And because we only connect you with the very best, we guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Call 1-800-PREDICT today and get 20 minutes for just $20.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh yeah, it is the moment you have been waiting for.
Don't get me wrong, I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom.
Andy's out, Ryan and Brad are in.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
This is the Manny Fry Show.
We have a deal. We have a trade deal between the two largest economies in the world. And it's a big deal. It's a huge deal. It will bring stability. It will bring predictability. That's very important for our businesses on both sides of the Atlantic. It's 15% tariffs across the board, all inclusive. The investments Mr. President just described that are going to go to the United States and the purchases over there. Indeed, basically, the European market is open. It's 450 million people. So it's a good deal. It's a huge deal.
Yeah.
Was tough negotiations. I knew it at the beginning, and it was indeed very tough, but we came to a good conclusion for both sides. So again, congratulations and many thanks.
Thank you very much.
Well, this is the Manny Fry Show, and one thing that I just learned, I don't know about you, is that Europe has a president. I don't know that I ever really thought about the fact that this multi-legged beast had a president already, but it's supposed to be a bunch of individual nations. This, I guess, benefits the EU when they can cut one big deal like this. Tell you what, though, the people that I see from Europe on socials, they are not happy about this deal. Welcome to Wiggins America. That just goes to show you the Wiggins America. I say that because that's my weekend show. Sorry. Hey, welcome to the Andy Fry Show.
Get it right.
My fault. So that just shows you how much our media is biased against this. Because if Europe hates it, then naturally it's because it's too good of a deal for us. This is something that they feel like they're getting taken advantage of. So you'd think if Europeans and European media are all against it, the U.S. media would have to say, well, yeah, this is a good deal for the U.S., but they're not.
But it means Europeans are paying more on American products, making our Made in America products less competitive overseas. So is it better than 30%? Of course it's better than 30%, but it's going the wrong way. It's hurting jobs in the United States. It's hurting Europe, our best allies, and it's raising costs for Americans by 15%. It's just like a sales tax.
Yeah, it just hurts everybody, according to some guy on MSNBC. That's, of course, what they were pre-programmed to say, so they were going to say it. The facts are, the U.S. is going to make more money from this 15% tariff. Used to be 30 just because Trump was threatening 30, and it was maybe going to be 10 because he was going to do 10 across the board on everybody, on everything. But they landed on 15. Now, here's the interesting thing. What he just said there is not entirely true, because what Europe is paying, what basically we're exporting at, is 0%. So they're not paying anything on our imports or exports coming from us. So that opens their market to us tremendously.
Yeah.
And closes off us from them. Because the big point here that I think gets lost in the discussion about tariffs is that the whole point of it is not just to make more money. although that's working, we're seeing another budget surplus 2 months in a row now. How often does that happen in the U.S.? Not very. They're looking back years to find the last time that that's happened. And it's because of the tariffs. But the whole point of this is not a short-term gain. It's a long-term gain.
Yeah.
And you know the rate of tariff if you produce something in the United States? Zero. That's the point.
Yeah.
Is to get people to move here. Now, that may take some time, which is why we're asking you in the YouTube live chat poll today, how quickly will the tariff deals noticeably impact your life? And we gave you four choices. No, if you think that they're going to be a net loss or they'll never affect anything, then that's the first one. No, no impact, never. Then you could say, well, I think right away, we're already seeing it. You could say, you know, we're seeing a budget surplus, but does that impact you is the question. 1 year and then the end of Trump's term, because a lot of people are saying it's going to take between a year and 3 years for a lot of this stuff to really kick in. So we're asking you that question just based on your own perspective, which is the main one that you have, is your own. That's the YouTube live chat poll. I pulled up this from over the weekend because I couldn't believe, we never unplug from the news here, of course. Maybe you do on the weekends, maybe you don't. But there are several accounts online that were just, Brad, blasting the president for playing golf this weekend.
Oh, imagine that.
Now, they were, there's lots of footage of him on the golf course. There's a little controversy with somebody dropping a ball, and everybody say, oh, they look, he's cheating. You know, I have no idea. But there are lots of people grabbing footage of him playing golf, influencers, so forth. This is an account called Republicans Against Trump. And I screenshotted it because within a couple hours of him posting this, or her, whoever it is, Republicans Against Trump, the narrative changed a bit, didn't it? I'll read it. It says, after spending all day yesterday playing golf on the taxpayer's dime and rage tweeting about prosecuting former VP Harris, Trump kicked off day two in Scotland with more golf. Laziest president in history. That's what it said. And now, a couple hours later, they announced a $1.3 trillion deal with the EU. So he's complaining that he's playing golf on the taxpayer's dime, which, and also it's his own course, so you know, that's a little part of that too.
How much is he charging himself?
He's not charging himself much to play on his own course. But you know, he does have to have a detail travel with him, and that costs money, which every president does. I'm not sure why it's such a big deal when he does it.
Oh, you know why.
Laziest president in history. Within hours, the trade deal was announced. And then I pulled up this comment. I'm like, well, that's the best. I was getting on this to comment this very thing, and I'm like, can't beat that one. So I just liked it. This guy's name is Anthony Quinn. He says, this lazy president, and pardon the language in this, I'm warning you ahead of time, this lazy president just signed a trade deal with the EU while on the golf course, estimated to be worth $1.3 trillion. What has your lazy ass done today? So this person is just tweeting from their basement while the president is out in another country cutting deals and playing golf that are going to bring $1.3 trillion to the United States over the next 3 years.
Listen, I'm not a golfer and I'm not in the business area. I don't play, I play golf, but I'm not what I would consider a golfer or what you would even consider a golfer. You'd watch me and be like, Brad, stop. But I'm having fun. But it is my understanding that a lot of business deals happen on the golf course.
Oh, yeah. That's very true. That's one of the reasons you play golf with people that you need to talk things
because
through
there's
with.
There's a lot of time to
talk. A lot of downtime. And you're not just sitting there in a business. You're not in a room. You know, you're doing something. You're right. Hanging out. You're getting to know each other. And a lot gets done on the golf course. I can't say that I've done a lot of business deals on the golf course, but I understand why you would.
Yeah.
This is interesting because the argument against tariffs, I think, is a fair one. They're going to raise prices. They're going to raise prices. The problem is they haven't raised prices. Everybody's been screaming that for months, and our prices just have not gone up. We have had inflation, but it's low. It's very, very low. It's way lower than it has been, and in fact, it's actually below historical averages right now. So that's part of the big conversation with Jerome Powell. Why don't you lower interest rates? But the fact is that could prices still rise because of tariffs? I don't know the answer to that question. But I'm always glad to see when people who did criticize it come back and say, you know what? So far, I've been wrong. There's very little of that in our public discourse right now. Nobody ever wants to admit when they're wrong. I would like to fancy myself as somebody who, if I were dead wrong about something, could come back to it, like election predictions. I do that every year. Mm-hmm. If I'm wrong, I'm going to come back and tell you I was wrong, partially because you can see the record.
Right.
I'm on the air. You can go back and get the podcast. You can point out when I'm wrong. So why not get ahead of it when you're wrong? Bill Maher is actually doing that.
I remember I, along with probably most people, was saying at the beginning, oh, you know, by the 4th of July, somebody had a thing how the country was, the economy was going to be tanked by then. And I was kind of like, well, that seems right to me. But that didn't happen. Now, it could happen tomorrow. I'm just saying that's reality. So let's work first from the reality of that, not from I just hate Donald Trump. Because that's boring and doesn't get us anywhere and leads you to dishonesty. Because the truth is, I don't know what his strategy is. But look, the stock market is at record highs. I know not everybody lives by the stock market, but I also drive around. I don't see a country in a depression at all. I see people out there just living their lives. And I would have thought, and I got to own it, that that these tariffs were going to sink this economy by this time, and they didn't. So, you know, how do we deal with that fact? Because that's the fact.
Thank you, Bill Maher. That's a fair assessment. I see people commenting right now, and you can do so as well, on our YouTube live chat. Paul says companies overstocked, anticipating higher tariffs. I've heard that argument before. They're eating the increase, but it won't last for long. Fair. Fair assessments. We just don't know if that's true yet. You're saying that you know for a fact that that's going to happen when we don't really know. And in fact, all the people who said that this was going to cause a depression and was going to send prices of everything soaring have all been wrong so far. So I'm willing to meet you halfway and say, hey, maybe it's just so far. Maybe these problems are around the corner. Maybe tariffs aren't this silver bullet that we're on the right a lot of times looking to now because Trump is, wow, this guy's right so often. Can you believe the economy? It's great. These things are going really well. We have a budget surplus. Maybe all that does come crashing down because over time it whittles it off. I don't know the answer to that, but my point is neither do you. And this is an experiment, and so far you have to admit that it's working. You can be skeptical, but you have to admit that it's working, and I appreciate that Bill Maher is saying that. Let me ask you one more question. If you're listening right now, Brad, I'll ask you too. We've seen a budget surplus now 2 months in a row.
Mm-hmm.
My big concern with the big, beautiful bill was that it overspent. Is it possible? Again, we're all dealing in theory here.
Yeah.
We're walking through these things together. Is it possible that somehow, because we didn't account for the decrease in government spending, which the big, beautiful bill did do, it decreased it overall. It still didn't balance it, but it decreased it. And the increase in income that they didn't account for. Is it possible that we could multiple months in a row, we've already said two, but you know, is it possible that for the rest of the year, God forbid the rest of Trump's presidency, that we actually see a budget surplus? What do you think?
A budget surplus? I think that's a little bit...
2 months in a row.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I still think that's a little bit optimistic. But I think that what we will see is that this increase in the deficit from the big, beautiful bill will be a lot smaller than what people anticipated, especially the naysayers. Because when they looked at that and when they calculated that, it looks like they weren't calculating the income from the tariffs. They were just calculating taxes as income.
Or the increase in the economy.
Right.
And companies moving here, which isn't going to happen right away, but it is happening.
But I have cuts and cuts and cuts and cuts of audio from the people of the White House, spokespersons from the Treasury Department and you know all of these other departments from the White House saying, listen, we can't just cut our way out of this. We have to grow into this economy. We have to grow into a budget, a balanced budget as well. And that's what they're working on, and that's what they're doing. So I think that it's going to be a lot closer than a lot of the quote-unquote panickins said it was going to be.
Speaking of admitting you're wrong, I could be very wrong on that. I've said, and I'm quoting the same numbers as most people were, that Democrats were overspending by $2 trillion a year. Republicans now under this new bill will be overspending by $1 trillion a year. But so far, that's not even proving to be true. And I hope I am wrong. And if I am, I'll admit it. And I'll gladly admit that one. We're going to take a quick break here. That's probably the biggest news of the weekend. As long as you don't consider Happy Gilmore 2 the biggest news from the weekend, which I really did consider leading with. I really did, because it's pretty big news. Like, it's a cultural touchstone. Everybody is watching this movie. We will talk about that in the show. But coming up next, I would say the constant big news is the Obama administration and the possible treason. You know, we don't know what the prosecution's going to do yet, and we're going to find out what the next steps are in that story, in that case, with Ryan Schmelz, Fox News Radio Capitol Hill and White House correspondent, coming up next. Yeah.
The DNI is releasing documents that are unnerving, and they sent it over to the Department of Justice. So let's use the process of getting it out of the politics of the moment. And if there's any there, have a special counsel look at it. I'm not going to make a judgment about who did what, but I think the country would be well served by a process that allowed somebody outside of DOJ to look at it. That's what we did in the past.
Lindsey Graham made the rounds this weekend, Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, saying that a special counsel should be appointed to investigate the, I don't know what we're calling it, Obamagate from 2016. Ryan Schmelz is here, Fox News Radio, Capitol Hill, and White House correspondent. Hi, Ryan.
What's going on? How are you?
So is this, from Senate Republicans, primarily Lindsey Graham, is this a surprise? Would this be them getting behind it? Or are they saying, nah, yeah, kind of, but let's do it this way?
It's hard to really know because we don't know what the attorney general wants to do. You know, right now the ball is in Pam Bondi's court, and it's up to her to decide what she wants to do about potentially investigating Barack Obama. Now, you keep in mind, if they were to appoint a special counsel, if they were to prosecute, no matter what, the Supreme Court's already given presidents immense amounts of unity when it comes to, pretty much they have a lot of protections now because of the case that President Trump argued before the Supreme Court. So President Trump's lawyers in his election interference case in many ways have given Barack Obama a lot of potential prosecutorial protections that he otherwise wouldn't have had beforehand. But that doesn't exactly exempt members of his cabinet if that's where they want to go.
Ryan, can you explain the process for us a little bit with this? Is it that the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, came out and she presented all this evidence? Now that evidence, she refers it to the DOJ for prosecution. I understand that part. But does the DOJ then now have to completely start from scratch with that evidence?
I think that's part of it, yeah. I mean, they pretty much have to do their own case, and they can just use the information that the DNI gave them and decide if that's valid or not. So pretty much, yeah, I think they would have to launch their own investigation from scratch. They'd have to do it their own way and all that. But they'd be able to use, obviously, the information they got from the intelligence community. They would just have to pretty much go through the normal procedural routes after that.
What is the sense, since you're there, what is the sense on Capitol Hill? Is this a really big story that the American people and media aren't really focusing on enough? Or is this kind of a partisan game? Some people are treating it as a big deal. Others are trying to downplay it like usual.
I mean, I've seen a lot of mainstream outlets covering this one. So, I mean, you know, we had questions asked by a reporter from another network that was on our radar to be asking Hakeem Jeffries not too long ago, which we thought was like, oh, okay, wow, that's interesting. And then, you know, there's a big back and forth right now between Democrats and Republicans on this. I mean, the number one argument I think you hear from Democrats is that they call this a distraction because they believe that this is a way for Trump to divert and not talk about the Epstein files and to get something else into the news. Whereas Republicans, I mean, this is kind of vindication for some of them that, you know, they believe that President Trump always was, they believe President Trump always was having collusion against him, whether it was Barack Obama or it was Democrats in Congress while he was in office. But, you know, remember, President Trump had to deal with this story for like a good 3 years during his first administration. So it was a nonstop news cycle with him being asked about this Russian collusion case. So I think Republicans in many ways are kind of saying this is finally, you know, the information we've been waiting for, even though we've known it the whole time.
Ryan, I'm glad you mentioned that it's weird, the parallels here, because in the first administration or the first term of Trump, you had the Russia investigation with the special counsel and this constant narrative that plagued Trump that we know now, at least it looks to be completely made up. That was the first 2-3 years of his first term. Now he's in second term.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're talking about what maybe the first 2-3 years of the second term, they're going to be reverse investigating this. I mean, I guess, is that the timeline? Is that this could take that long?
Well, I don't know. That's the big question. I mean, when you're prosecuting, if you're going to try to prosecute or investigate an entire administration, there's a lot of things you're going to have to find out. And there's a lot of people you're going to have to interview. And I mean, we're going back years. I mean, we don't even know if the statute of limitations still is in effect for some of these cases. So that might be something that works against them, too. But yeah, I mean, this was 3 years of President Trump's presidency. That's a lot of timeline for them to work with and a lot of information they're gonna have to deal with too. So where they even start, where they even go, we don't know. It's still very early.
Right. Let me ask you about the other maybe less salacious news stories going on Capitol Hill. You're there and covering Congress, of course, as usual. Is Congress on recess right now?
The House is on recess. The Senate comes back to this evening.
So I've seen a lot of people, as usual, influencers and so forth, criticizing this recess, saying that this is something they shouldn't be doing because they should be there getting Trump's picks through still, which we're still, you know, 6 months in. He hasn't gotten them all through, apparently. But then also that the way that Johnson is doing this, that something like he's gaveling back in every few days so that it's not an official recess. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. So that's called a pro forma session. They do this every time Congress is out. Pretty much one member will come. They will preside over the House and then they'll gavel in and gavel out relatively quick. They'll like insert legislation into the congressional record. They do some like procedural stuff like that. So Speaker Johnson does have to do this every once in a while. Like it has to be him. It cannot be somebody else. So that's what that is. What was the other question? So the Senate is still in. So the August recess has not happened yet for the Senate. They have threatened this idea of not going home for August recess. So the leader Thune's kind of teased this idea of them staying in town to confirm as many of Trump's nominees as possible. And one thing that was pointed out earlier is like they're actually ahead of schedule for most presidential administrations. Thune has actually been pretty solid about getting a lot of President Trump's nominees through as quickly as possible with a lot of things working against him. I mean, there has been a lot of stonewalling tactics and a lot of delays that Democrats have attempted over some other issues that have made this a more drawn out process than Republicans would like. And the one thing Thune likes to point out constantly is that President Trump at this point in his term has not had a single cabinet nominee decided by either voice vote or unanimous consent, which is very rare that at this point you haven't had that happen yet. So he's kind of using that as an example of how little Democrats are willing to play ball with confirming some of these nominees. And despite that, they've still gotten a good amount confirmed. I think they're ahead of what they were in the first term of President Trump and ahead of, you know, maybe even Joe Biden and Barack Obama, too.
See, this is why I like asking you these questions directly, because if you just read it online, it would sound like they're historically behind. But that's not the case. Last question for you, Ryan. What is the agenda for Congress after this recess? What's big on the docket?
Well, here's the other reason why they're getting so much criticism for the recess is because they've got a government funding battle that's going to happen the minute they get back. We've got until the end of September to get a government funding agreement to avoid a shutdown. And I don't think they're getting back till like early September. So they're going to have less than 30 days to work with when they get back here. And Speaker Johnson has said he wants to pass the 12 individual spending bills, what they call appropriations bills. The Senate's trying to get theirs done as well. And they might vote on like two or three this week. But, you know, to get all 12 of those passed, you know, you're going to have to negotiate them too. So the House will pass theirs. The Senate will pass theirs. Then they've got to negotiate them. The only problem is the Senate's got needs 60 votes, so they're going to need Democrats to play ball with them. And will Democrats be willing to play ball is an entirely separate conversation.
Ooh. Well, we talked to Representative Bost a couple days ago, and he said they were about 60% of the way there, which sounds nice, but I would also figure that's probably the easiest 60%, and the rest of it's the hard part, right?
Well, and it's also easier for the House just to pass their own bills because they can do the simple majority there. But the reality is whatever bills the House is passing, that's not what the final version is going to look like, because they're going to need 60 votes in the Senate. They're going to need some Democrat votes. So there's going to have to be some type of negotiation. So obviously wishful thinking makes you think that Republicans are going to be able to get, you know, bills that they like at some point done. Not everything they want, but, you know, they've got the leverage. They've got the majority in the House. They've got the majority in the Senate. So you know, one would think that they're going to look more conservative than they look liberal, but, you know, how much negotiating power Democrats are willing to give up and how much they're willing to play ball, you know, even if they're just a couple are willing to play ball, that might not be enough. They're going to need at least three to get to 60 votes. And then you maybe could potentially lose somebody like Rand Paul. You could lose some of the moderate members. You could lose some of the hardliners. You know, there's a risk that you run when you do the negotiating phase, because there's some Republicans who might just not like the final product.
Sounds like what you're telling us, Ryan, is that throughout the next probably 2 months plus, the headline that we're going to be talking about with you is government shutdown. How close are we?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
In September, it's probably going to be the story like 95% of the time.
All the time. Yeah. Yeah. Ryan Schmelz, Fox News Radio, Capitol Hill, and White House correspondent. Thank you, as always.
Good to see you.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. We are going to take a short break here. I think when we come back, I'll kind of leave this up to you. You know, if you want to get into the chat and let us know if you watched Happy Gilmore 2 this weekend. Brad says he did. We haven't talked about it yet. I've watched about half of it, and I'll give you my review when we come back, if you all are talking about it in the chat. If you're not, we'll just avoid the topic because it's not as big of a deal as I thought. But if you're watching it, let us know, and we'll be right back. It's a tough song because this is just the intro. Once the song kicks in, it's really good, too. This is just getting going.
Big fan of this song.
Yeah.
I always try to put it in a spot where it can, you can let it play out.
Because you have to.
I like to put a song that I personally like for my segment, but the problem is that you always cut it off with the stupid intro.
Yeah. I saw a garage band of 15-year-olds play this song over the weekend.
Me too.
Did you?
So good.
Did they crush it?
Oh, yeah. They were killing it. There it is. This is the part where you really crank it if you're in your car. But don't do that now because we're talking. It'll just be us screaming at you.
Or do. We'll let everybody hear us.
Either way. Depends on if you want to get mad.
We got things to say.
We got important things to talk about. Enough of you are chiming in on Happy Gilmore 2 that we are going to have to address Happy Gilmore 2. Have you guys both watched it?
Yes.
Yes, I have.
Review.
It's Adam Sandler's world, and we are just living in it.
That's what I thought, too. I've only got halfway through because my wife didn't want to finish it last night. We were doing something else.
This could have been the worst movie ever, and it still was going to hit to a certain extent because of, one, the nostalgia. Mm-hmm. Two, like I said, because Adam Sandler knows everyone. I mean, everyone is in this movie. It's a little bit cheesy, but it's perfect Adam Sandler comedy.
Is this a golfer's movie? Like, do you have to like golf to...
No.
But it adds to it, right? If you know all the golfers.
It helps. That added so much to it having... And now, that's not a spoiler or anything. It had been in the trailers and stuff shown that Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy and Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka were all going to be in it. But their parts in it were way better than I thought they were going to be.
Yeah.
It was way more than cameos for those guys. They actually had parts. Like, Scottie Scheffler, I thought, was hilarious.
Yes.
He did a great job.
Yeah, I thought he did a great job, too.
That added so much to the movie, and I think that was the part of the movie where I was like, this is actually, like, good. Like, the way they're able to incorporate them and them not be just golfers, but also actors to a certain extent, too.
Well, it wasn't just modern golfers either. There were some.
Oh,
like,
totally.
Like,
I mean, John Daly's a character in the movie.
Well, yeah. And they had all these, like, famous golfers from years past, you know, Lee Trevino and Jack Nicklaus,
Jordan Spieth and Bubba's in it, and Ricky Fowler. There's a bunch of big names.
And they had
in it,
speaking parts, and they were cracking jokes, and they did a great job.
I'm going to pull up a couple comments here online. Toy Maltese says the second half of Happy Gilmore 2 is the best part, which I haven't seen yet. So I feel like my review is still forthcoming. But I will say this, that it made me realize and remember how much I liked Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Because his movies recently, I'm not saying they're bad.
They're not to the level, though.
They're not those were.
No.
And they're not even trying to be. It's not like he's attempting to hit the same notes as he was when he was 25 years old or whatever. But Billy Madison blew my freaking 14-year-old mind when I watched that movie, and I think is probably responsible for me wanting to go into media in some ways. But then Happy Gilmore, I thought, was also great. What's funny is I remember being in college because I hate basically everything Wedding Singer on. I was like, okay, this isn't those two movies. It's not bad. Mm-hmm. It's just not what I was wanting because Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore were so good. And then all the movies after that I thought were just a different version of Adam Sandler. Didn't care for it as much, but weren't bad movies.
Yeah.
He must have gotten a lot of criticism like that for a long time because he did some show about he was the producer. He wasn't really involved with the show. I don't think a whole lot. I think it was called Undeclared was the name of this one season show on Fox or something back in the year 2000 or 2001. And I was watching it because I was in college and it was a show about college. And I remember that Adam Sandler did a episode of the show where he was on it just very briefly, a couple scenes. And he walks past a bunch of college kids, and they're like, oh, wow, Adam Sandler, you're a legend, dude, because of Billy Madison. Everything you did after that kind of sucked. And I was like, yes, that means, I didn't care about the comments so much, but what it means is that Adam Sandler knew that people said that about him. And it was like, thank you for hearing me, sir. I respect you now. But Happy Gilmore 2, what I realized I missed was... In the beginning of the movie, when he goes golfing at the municipal court with Eric Andre, and the kid's last name is Herlihy in real life.
And Margaret Qualley, is that how you say it?
I didn't know who she was.
She's been in some stuff on Netflix.
Okay.
Stuff,
So the kid's name is Herlihy. He's been in some stuff with Saturday Night Live and his own little group. But his dad is one of the writers of the movie, and it's how he got involved is Tim Herlihy. And so... Adam Sandler starts, Happy Gilmore, starts hitting balls. He's doing terrible, of course, for a while there. And he's hitting trees, and they're just bouncing off and, like, hitting him, like, over and over. Like, over and over, hitting a tree, hitting him in the face and the groin. Like, it was just, like, over the top stupid.
Yeah.
And he was doing the, oh, shubba-da-ba-da stuff. And I was like, he's parodying himself at this point. Everybody knows that so well that he knows it, and he's doing it anyway.
Cutting off his cursing. Like he's about to,
you lick my just like you know, right when he's starting to say the first letter, it cuts it.
So somebody explained to me what all my buddies were texting me over the weekend and saying, "Hey, I was watching this." Some of them with their families, other ones were like, "Don't watch it past this point with your family." But they were saying that the movie was really good and enjoyable and a throwback, but that the second half there's a scene that they keep talking about Bad Bunny. What is that? What's Bad Bunny?
So Bad Bunny is a singer. He's a rapper, and he's Puerto Rican rapper, so it's a lot of in Spanish.
Okay.
And he's just absolutely ballooned. He's gotten super famous here in the last couple of years. He plays Oscar, who is Happy Gilmore's caddy, but the only reason that he becomes his caddy is because Happy feels bad for him because he gets fired from the clubhouse by Travis Kelce, who is the manager of the clubhouse.
Are they playing themselves?
No.
They're just playing other characters.
Correct.
Okay. Okay.
And Bad Bunny, he has some really funny scenes as the caddy. I can't think of a specific one that stands out, though, that was like, this was the best scene off the top of my head. But people are raving about the job that he did because doesn't speak English very well, like knows nothing about golf, like caddy. Kind of like when in the first one he brought on the homeless guy caddy. It's very much so that, like, he forgets a caddy. He's like, you. That's very much so what it is. So. No, it was really, he did a really good job, but I can't think of a scene off the top of my head that's like.
So we're all thumbs up, though, on the movie?
Yeah, I liked it. Great dose of nostalgia. It was a lot wilder, like more absurd than the original one.
Yeah, there's a lot more big physical comedy.
And especially the longer you get in the show, the more absurd stuff gets, and you're like, oh, okay, I see. Because the other one, like Happy Gilmore's long drive was just based on his dad teaching him the perfect slap shot, and he was able to translate that into golf. They come up with some absurd ligament story about this for why other golfers are able to hit this long drive now. And they start adding like weird golf courses and all that sort of thing. So it gets like this is crazy, but it's still wildly entertaining.
So we're all thumbs up.
Yeah,
let us know what you think. We won't drag this on, but I would like to know. Man, the ones I'm pulling up, though, Joe says Adam Sandler movies are just him hanging out with his boys so everybody gets a check. Good gig if you can get it. I actually, that's true.
Yeah.
Jordan says Happy Gilmore 2 is trash. Quick Rick says still haven't watched Happy Gilmore 1.
Oh, homework assignment.
Dude. I mean, really? I didn't know there was anybody in America who hadn't seen that movie.
It's on Netflix right now, but it's leaving soon, so you better get on there and watch it, Rick.
Tommy says, watched Happy Gilmore 2, wasn't impressed, but wasn't disappointed. It was as expected. Okay.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fair. Let us know what you think by logging on and leaving your review. I'll be monitoring that just because I'd like to know. Everybody in my orbit seems to like it, so I'd like to hear from you. We'll be right back with Wiggins America. It's the Monday Roundup. Stop the run. Thanks to the comments. Still reading all your comments on Happy Gilmore 2. I can't really disagree with a lot of them, other than somebody saying Happy Gilmore is trash. We were talking on the break, and Ethan goes, if you come into this with any expectations, you're going to be disappointed. And I think that's the key, is I had low expectations. Yeah. I thought this was going to be terrible, and then was like, oh, it's kind of fun. You're not changing the world here.
It was very aware of what it was. It was like
absolutely
a nostalgic throwback movie, and they took those shots and wove together gags and made a good movie out of it.
Every now and
exactly.
then, because I'm on the radio, I get to sort of self-indulge, and I'm going to do that. There's a movie I'm looking for. I'll tell you the name of it. I can't find the movie. It's a newer movie. It was made in 2023 or 24. And usually you'd think, oh, if it's like a movie from the late 70s that was only on TV, yeah, you'd have a tough time finding that. This is a newer movie. If somebody can tell me where to find a movie called Mr. K, it's Crispin Glover, and it's about him being trapped in a hotel or apartment complex, and it's very French looking, and I don't really get like why he doesn't try to leave the hotel sooner in the movie, but apparently he works in it and he's living in it. The hotel starts to shrink. The whole hotel, he like keeps measuring the hotel and keeps every day he's like, this hotel is getting smaller. And I'm like, what in the world? What a ridiculous plot. And it's shrinking and everybody in it just ignores him, but is like, yeah, it is. But who cares? And like, it's a crazy, like, is he nuts? What's happening kind of movie. And if somebody can point me in the direction, I've 2 months, I've been trying to find this on DVD or streaming, cannot find the movie. Time for Wiggins America.
Wiggins! Oh! Monday Roundup! This here's the wildest ride in the wilderness!
All right, well, Ryan asked me to take care of this today because he's hosting, and I thought, well, I'll try. So I've got I've got a couple stories here. I want to lead with kind of the big one. You guys have been paying attention.
You always lead with a big one.
Yeah. You guys have been paying attention to the stories about redistricting, you know, mid-decade or whatever it is. They only do it, what, every 10 years?
10 years after the census.
After the census. And there are a lot of Republican states that are saying, hey, we can redistrict and get ourselves more seats for the midterm. States like Ohio and Texas and, you know, one other state came up on this, but Texas is going to go ahead and go through with this, is what I'm seeing.
Are you certain?
Well, this is an ABC article, and it says Texas plows ahead with new maps.
Yeah, I'm seeing the same thing. Ohio is on that road. Florida might do it, too.
Yeah.
And you, actually, the justification that Ron DeSantis is giving is that, and this is true, that Democrats who are in charge of that census, which took longer than usual because of COVID in 21, that came out later than it should have, they use that to, of course, reapportion all the seats in the Electoral College. They robbed seats from Republican states.
Yes. And I've seen that too.
And it is significant. It's like a total, like, they robbed seats from a couple of random Republican states, like Utah, but they robbed more from Democrat states, or vice versa, I should say.
Yeah.
Where the net gain for Democrats was like plus 6 seats and plus 6 Electoral College votes. And so Ron DeSantis is saying, well, because we were frauded, we should have the right to mid 10 years before the census is done again, redraw these maps. And that doesn't fix that problem, but it does offset it if they're able to redraw.
Right. And if the allegations are true that those maps were drawn poorly or incorrectly under, you know, suspicious circumstances.
They were. It's true.
It rights a wrong because you actually, like, the way our government is set up, you want accurate representation of people who are doing, you know, who are representing. And so another state has come up on this list, and it's Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if you guys, you remember in 2022 when Missouri was redrawing their maps, there was a big fight. Do you remember what the numbers were?
I do. 6-2.
6-2 was what they settled on.
6 Republicans, 2 Democrats.
Right. But they could have drawn the maps to a 7-1. Or, Ryan, I think you floated an idea of possibly even a 6-1.
Well, I've talked to people, you know, because it's here. Like, we're not talking to people in Florida or Texas as much. I mean, we talk to national people. But we're not talking to people on the ground making these decisions as often. But here in Missouri, we do talk to these people more. And I've spoken to people about this issue at the time, especially, because it made me really mad that Republicans weren't bolder to go after a 7-1 map. Now, the people that I was talking to, they said, eh, it's not as easy as that. They said, it's tough to draw that district, which would be Kansas City. It wouldn't affect St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to draw a Republican seat out of that because you dilute the Republican vote a little bit and you create what could be still a Democrat seat. To which I replied, then it's still a Democrat seat. You didn't lose any. It's still
right.
a 6-2
right.
then. But I said to him at the time, and I'm not going to out him, I'll just say I was talking to somebody. I said, well, why don't you just draw a 6-1-1 map where you make 6 still Republicans, 1 Democrat, and 1 that's a true swing state,
or
swing
one,
district,
yeah.
Which I thought was a perfectly reasonable way to go about it.
Yeah, I look at this, and what the headline says is that Missouri lawmakers aren't really interested in trying to redraw these district maps. But I look at this as somebody from Illinois, and I just want to tell any GOP lawmakers that may be listening right now, if the shoe was on the other foot, if the Democrats had the opportunity to draw a 7-1 Democrat map out of a 6-2 Democrat map, would they do it?
And telling you, from living in Illinois, they 1,000% would do that.
They absolutely would. They are doing that.
I watched them draw their Republican darling out of a map. They drew Adam Kinzinger out of a seat in Illinois. Kinzinger lost a seat because of those redistricting. And he was more Democrat than any Republican on that board. So to me, I don't understand why you wouldn't at least try or make it. Because if the shoe were on the other foot, they would do it. They would come after you. They would try it.
I am in Illinois, too. I am in one of those districts. My representative is Nikki Budzinski. She doesn't represent any of us at all. And because the district is drawn like a snake from here to Peoria, and you can't even drive the district.
It just hits
and
different
look,
towns.
I'm complaining about it, but I'm also saying there's only one way to combat it, and that's for everybody to max out their states. Mm-hmm. That's the fairest way to do it. Nobody likes the way gerrymandering is, but there's no solution other than everybody saying, agree, let's all max it out.
Let's just do what we can
do. Let the cards fall where they may, but Republicans are too weak-willed to do it. You have to do it. If you're going to play by their rules, they're going to beat you. You got to play it. You got to play on the even field that we are now creating. All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.